this sermon series that we now find ourselves at the end of is about the spiritual risks that we are called to take, or at least to consider taking, during the course of our daily lives. It was inspired, I think, by the fact that I witnessed so many of you doing amazingly courageous things in your lives, and that at some point, each and every one of us is called to be courageous in the middle of seemingly ordinary days, and that such acts of courage have got to be noticed and praised and honored. We focus in these sermons on faith, on the idea that a person, regardless of their particular religious convictions or if they assert some sort of supernatural power at all in this universe, each person still must act from time to time on things that they cannot prove. We don't know everything. We can't sit around waiting until we can prove everything in order to make a path through our lives. And sometimes we have to take the mighty risk of believing in each other and ultimately of being vulnerable to each other. We talked about mercy, which is a difficult word for a great many of us liberal religious types. And we allowed ourselves to wonder if mercy is indeed no longer the exclusive domain of a distant and all-powerful deity, might it not be at least in part our work to do, ours to offer a hurting world? It's a scary thought, really, to imagine that we ourselves might have the power to give, receive, and withhold mercy, that sometimes we are mightier than we dare imagine, and that sometimes we are at the mercy of others. As I said in conclusion to that sermon, if we are to live in the fullness of our natures, we must fall to our knees, either literally or metaphorically, from time to time, knowing that we need some power beyond or different from ourselves, and we must rise from our knees, literally or metaphorically, ready to be that power for others. And finally, we looked at humility, at the idea that the bravest and hardest thing of all is often to give an honest assessment of ourselves to ourselves, to see that we are not holy saints or holy sinners, but something in between. And now, to finish it all up, we come to truth-telling, a concept enshrined in my personal favorite of our seven principles, which calls us to go forth on a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I always think that free and responsible really need to go together there. To my mind, truth-telling might just be the culminating principle behind all those other spiritual risks we've talked about. Faith, after all, is simply telling the truth about what our spirits hunger for, about the fact that we yearn to be in relationship with something besides our own small selves, even if that something isn't necessarily God. And it's about having the courage to speak this truth even when it seems irrational or difficult. Mercy involves claiming the power we have to change the world and be changed by it, not shying away from our responsibility and our vulnerability and humility. Well, humility involves the simple and difficult truth that we so often forget, which is that the world does not revolve around you or me or any single one of us. All of these are truths, sometimes difficult, sometimes frightening truths, which we are asked to encounter every day in one way or another. And so the final risk behind them all is just to tell the truth, to say it like it is, to have some awareness of the world in which we are living and the life that we lead. One of my colleagues, the Reverend Joshua Snyder, said that Unitarian Universalism is a religion that wants us to tell the truth to ourselves. And I agree with him. But I would add that any religion worth following for so much as a millisecond wants us to tell the truth to ourselves. Religion, when it is uncorrupted by dogma and small-mindedness, is fundamentally about seeking and claiming truth. But what is this truth that we so freely and responsibly search for among us? It is not a singular and unchanging truth for all circumstances and all days. It's not represented in the form of one man or one woman or one prophet, not contained in the person of Jesus or the words of the prophet Muhammad, but in the moving, changing experiences of human existence. Thus, for most thinkers today, religious and otherwise, truth is not one single, all-illuminating something, but a set of truths, all of which undergird our lives and call us to be in relationship to each other. There is no better statement of those multiple truths in which we move than the familiar cadence of Ecclesiastes 3, which tells us in these words that are written on so many of our hearts, there is a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to throw away stones and a time to gather stones together. Each of those actions, to weep and to laugh, to build up and to tear down, is right and good and true under certain circumstances. Though they seem to be utterly divergent, and sometimes they're two totally opposite truths, they are appropriate and necessary, and avoiding the dance of joy or tears is avoiding the act of truth-telling. It would be simple, wouldn't it, if this world were a blessed one, uniformly, always conforming to patterns of grace and wonder and awe. Surely it would also be simple if this life were merely hopeless plodding. It would be depressing, but it would be less confusing. But truth, holy and elusive truth, does not give us the chance for anything so simple. For everything there is a season and a time for every matter under heaven. Given this dance between competing truths, what is truth exactly? Being appropriately philosophical, I've worked myself into knots over this question over the years. But there comes a point when such dithering becomes a little bit self-indulgent, and such deep questions, when not brought into the sphere of the everyday, are not, say, totally useful. These days, I'm not as concerned about the existence or non-existence of absolute truths as I am about the necessity of seeking truth, the inevitability of finding even a tiny amount of it, and the call to speak it with courage. No matter what philosophical dithering we may choose to engage in, there is, in a given situation, more often than not, a better choice and a worse one, or a set of better choices and a set of worse ones. In most situations that are not formulated in the minds of philosophy textbook authors, there is a marked difference between right and wrong, true and false, self-deception and self-revelation. It's not about determining what is true in every situation in some big, absolute, and all-commanding sense for all eternity, but about determining what is true now, here, in this moment, given the choices and the power laid out before us, given all the forces at play in this moment, what is the only honest thing I can say? What is the truth that I am called to speak with conviction right now? If we spend too much of our time just looking and looking for that one single absolute truth, the answer of answers, we can also give ourselves the luxury of giving up entirely and determining there's no real truth anywhere. Then all that remains is the weird paradox of absolute relativism, the belief that nothing is really true and nothing really false, but everything just a mix of gray. Protestant theologian Paul Tillich said that there is a response a person might have when confronted with such swirling shades of gray and the philosophical exhaustion that leads us to stop looking for truth. He said, "If I am asked to surrender totally to relativism, I can say, 'But look, I live. I know what true and false mean. I can do something I can describe as better than something else. I venerate something which concerns me ultimately and which is holy for Him and for us. To lose track of the fact that there is in most situations a better and a worse option is to lose track of one's entire mission to seek and find truth. Without some insistence, perhaps built on your own particular faith, that things matter in this world, that some choices are better than others, there would be no search for truth and meaning, because there would be no truth at all. If Unitarian Universalism is a religion that wants us to tell the truth to ourselves, and if one of our principles is a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, we can fairly easily conclude that UUs believe, at the very least, that truth is worth looking for, and that once found, it's worth speaking loudly. So what truths constitute a spiritual risk? What truth is so hard to say or hear that our lips are stilled or our messages brought to silence? Perhaps nice truths are easy to say. Nice truths like, this is a beloved community we're proud to be a part of. That it's good and right to love one another, that flowers are pretty and kittens are fuzzy and babies are cute. Those are all true. But there are other truths so much harder and just as real. Other truths that must be spoken even if only in the silence of our own hearts. We Unitarian Universalists have been criticized, quite rightly, as a movement for being so bent on praising the inherent worth and dignity of every single person that we sometimes fail to speak about more difficult realities. We fail to name more difficult and sometimes contrary truths about being human. One of those truths about being human that we prefer to avoid is that being a person in this world is sometimes a broken and painful thing. And the fact that even if somebody's inherent worth and dignity is unflagging and their essential humanity is deserving of respect, they are still capable of evil almost beyond imagining. And even if we do believe that our good deeds can change the world, we must have a way to name our frustration and pain that comes with failure. Otherwise, we live in half-truths, happy truths, truths that don't challenge us. Otherwise, we run away from the spiritual risk. One brewer and I were recently talking about how difficult it can be to address situations that directly confront our UU tendency to always look for the good in human nature, to always look for the hopeful in the arc of human history. One of those situations that I haven't paid much attention to from this pulpit is the tragic shootings in Knoxville, Tennessee this September when a lone and hate-filled gunman entered a UU sanctuary and shot indiscriminately at the worshipers. There it is. A reality we can't hide from. Hitting closer to home than most stories of terror ever could. There are some things we cannot and should not deny. That something like evil can come to dominate a person or a group of people such that their actions are the purest form of hate. That even when people have inherent worth and dignity, they can also be agents of evil. That sometimes life is lived in the midst of unimaginable sorrow, and that God has nothing to do with such pain. One great UU theologian, James Luther Adams, used to say that until we liberal religious people learn to deal with and confront the reality of evil, we will never hold a candle to the power of evangelicals and fundamentalists. Because evil and pain are realities of human living. They can't be talked out of existence. They can't be danced around. They can't be ignored. They can only be confronted and with truth. And yet, for everything, there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. In many moments, it is our call, as spiritually courageous people, to see something that is broken to name it so, to call evil and hate out baldly for exactly what they are, and sometimes, it is our spiritual challenge to take the equal and opposite risk. The risk of naming the miraculous right here in our midst. There's a marvelous midrash, which is a Jewish teaching story, that talks about what many people understand to be the greatest miracle of the Hebrew Bible. This one event that Jewish children hear about again and again in Hebrew school and before which all of history stands in awe. That event is the parting of the Red Sea. And you might imagine that in this story, when Moses is said to have brought the Israelites out of bondage, only to stand in front of this vast water and raise his hand full of the power of God and part that sea, you might imagine that everyone who could have witnessed such an event would never forget it, that it would be one of the formative events of their lives. But the Midrash talks of two Israelites, Reuben and Shimon, who had a different experience. See, apparently, the bottom of the sea, though safe to walk on, was not completely dry, but a little bit muddy, like a beach at low tide. And Reuben stepped into it and curled his lip, saying, "What is this muck?" And Shimon scowled, "There's mud all over the place. This is just like the slime pits of Egypt. What's the difference?" exclaimed Shimon. "Mud here, mud there, it's all the same." And so it went for the two of them, grumbling their way across the bottom of the Red Sea. And because they never once looked up, they never understood why on the distant shore everyone else was singing songs of praise. For Reuben and Shimon, the miracle never happened. The lesson here is that there is often truth we simply fail to see. And that truth deserves speaking to. Somewhere in the midst of all of the mundane and distinctly terrible realities of life, the filth, the muck, and the pain, there is holiness. As Jacob said in the Hebrew Scriptures, "Surely God was in this place and I did not know it." In all of it, in every honest thing, there is meaning and holiness and even miracle. The truth is not simply the mud on our boots and the pain in our hearts and the very present reality of evil. The truth is also that there is some commanding reality, some pervasive meaning that exists not separate from but in the very midst of a broken world. May we then have the courage to speak the truth as it presents itself right here in these flawed days and nights given to us. May we speak not an abstract truth, not a truth of ideals or blind sorrow, but a truth that brings to bear all the forces that make our lives what they really are. In this moment, there is a truth in your life that merits speaking. May you find the courage to speak it boldly and with love. May it be so, and amen.